trying to make it so I hear you in the headphones equally.
Oh, well, here, how about if I just get right in the middle?
Yeah, okay, so let's go. Bill's yeah. on remote, so it's Tuesday. It's Tuesday afternoon. Tuesday.
I just picture me. Here I am in front of the courthouse, Jeffrey, and...
let's go live to Bill in New Haven. Bill, what's going on up there?
Well, I gotta tell you, it's beautiful out here, Jeffrey.
All right, it's Tuesday, what is the day? The 13th of June. 13th of June, episode 268 of the On Taking Pictures Photography Podcast.
Sounds so official when you say it that way.
I know. It's well, it'll fall off the rails quick enough.
it's gonna happen soon enough.
So you're in Connecticut. You're at mom's house.
I'm in Stonington, Connecticut. Yeah,
right.
It turned out that I had a shoot this morning in New Haven, and then it turns out I have another shoot tomorrow in New Haven. So I thought it was silly to go all the way home.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Right. So I came here and I'm going to stay overnight and see my mom and, you know.
Good. Well, you know.
Which is the funny thing about it is that ironically, we were up here this weekend. So I'm here 2 days later.
You can do your laundry and raid the refrigerator.
Exactly. That's exactly what I do. But yeah, so let's, we're a little tight on time today. So why don't
we are a little tight on time. You got things to do and I'm going to a baseball game. So yeah, go Nats.
I'm excited for your basketball. How are they doing? They're winning this year, right?
They're doing pretty well.
Was there a point at which they were doing really well?
Well, they were, last year and then they blew it in the playoffs. But you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's any day at the ballpark. It's a night game. So
it's just beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, you've got the sun at your back. You can see the silhouette of the Capitol building. I mean,
is it gonna cool off supposedly at some point today?
No, I don't think so.
Because it's pretty brutal out there.
It's hot. I was gonna go for a run earlier, and I went out on the porch and went, no.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna go for a run.
Came back in and had a beer. No,
nice try, legs.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that. Hey, I got a gift from Australia.
You know,
yesterday.
I saw this in the links, and I realized that in my email, the second oldest thing from May 31st is the email from this gentleman that I've yet to reply to because I've been so busy. It's gotten like sucked down my email chain. So continue.
Well, I get this, Philip, first of all, thank you, Philip Hill, for this lovely print. It is absolutely better in person, and I really dug it online. But seeing the thing in person, you can see the texture in the glass floor that you couldn't really see. It's a terrific print, so thank you very much. But the packaging, I mean, I've got a lot of prints and posters and things like that. Never have I received something packed so well. This thing, two sides of tissue paper around the print itself, bubble wrap, and then the tube itself, Bill, was like 5-inch, PVC tubing. It wasn't, this guy's not messing around.
Do you ever hear the story of when they had to ship some priceless Fabergé egg from I think it was the Cullinard diamond, like the star of Africa or something. They found this 400 carat diamond or whatever the hell it was, and they had to ship it to England, but they were worried it was going to get stolen in transit, so they sent three different ships so you couldn't tell which one it was on, that old chestnut.
Right.
But in reality, it wasn't on any one of those ships. They just sent it post.
Nice.
Because they figured, the chances of it getting lost in the mail, registered mail,
right,
are lower than. So anyway, so it was almost like that. Like, so he packaged it like that.
It was terrific. And it's a beautiful print. So thank you, Philip Hill. Thank you very much.
Philip Hill, I will be emailing you shortly for my copy.
First, I think this is the first print that I've received from Australia. So thank you very, very much.
I was going to say, from a listener, we've got a lot of
those. No, from Australia. This print has traveled further to get to me than anything I've ever ordered in my life. So thank you very much.
Man, it costs a lot of money to ship things from America to other places, but apparently it's a little cheaper sending stuff to America from other places.
Huh.
We had a conversation about this at lunch today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I also have to thank a couple people for some, can I do this Capture One thing?
No,
a couple people sent me some Capture One styles and,
I want to try the Capture One styles. Who do I talk to?
You you got to be cool. That's the first thing.
Oh, okay. Let me.
Apparently, that's not it because they sent them to me. Alexander Capture One Styles. It's actually they changed their name recently. I think it's just One Styles, but you can get to
AlexOnRaw.com.
Yeah, and he's got two sets, and they're the original Capture One sets, which I use. They're film styles, is what they're called. I used those a while back, and then he's got an extended set. There are 100 film styles in each set.
Okay.
They are backward compatible, I think all the way back to 6. So if you've got 6 up through 10, they will work. And I'm not usually a fan of styles and presets, especially as a finishing stage, but they are terrific to kind of get you in the ballpark of where you want to go and then, you know, adjust to taste.
Yeah. I am interested in these and I will look into trying them out or see if I can contact these people to get a shot at them.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a slightly larger discussion here about the idea of presets for film emulation, right? I mean, we talked about this years ago.
Right.
Have they gotten any better?
I think they have.
It's also interesting because you have to know what camera it's coming from in order to do a really accurate one, right? Because it's this translation that's happening. So you kind of have to know what language it's coming from. Because a Canon RAW file right out of the box looks different than a Nikon one, looks different from a Pentax, you know, et cetera, right?
Yes. Yes. And the other side of it is, the big ones for Nik Effects, Silver Effects, that was like the big presets.
Wait, that's the one that Google bought, right?
Bought and now has since abandoned.
But you can get them for free, right? Still.
You can still get them. Yeah, you can still get them.
Okay.
But somebody asked me, I think it was Govis. Nick, remind me whether or not it was you. Is there some other alternative to Silver Effects? And the other styles that I was just sent the other day are from a guy named Thomas Fitzgerald. And his package is called Silver Lux. And it's just black and white presets for Capture One.
He's got similar ones for Lightroom, it looks like.
Yes. He's got a bunch of them. He's got there's T-Pan, there's a I think a Color Lux.
And they're like $10. That's
not
bad.
They're not real expensive. He's got some that are specific to Fuji files, that work apparently well with the X-Trans sensor. And you know, yeah, they're not real expensive. $10-$12. You can get a bundle of all of them for I think 30 or 40. And I'm just kind of going through them and a lot of them are pretty cool. And one of the things that I like about Capture One is you can use, for example, these film styles, you can use those and then you can layer that on top of one of the Capture One built-in styles.
Sure.
And then tweak that further to taste. So they're great starting points. Again, I'm not really a huge fan of the set it and forget it, you know, one click. But if I can do something that does a lot of the heavy lifting to where I want to go and then refine it to where I want it, I'm good with that. I'm fine with it.
Do you think that there's actually value in... I'm fine with the idea of there being some sort of preset that is like, oh, this is an interesting look and okay, I can apply that and I can play from there. Mm-hmm. But the idea that we're still chasing after, I want my 5D files to look like Kodachrome. Like, is that a fool's errand?
I don't think so, because it's a look that you either knew and loved or have come to know and love.
Right.
And to your point earlier,
I wonder if it's possible, you know, cause no one's ever got it quite right.
Well, there was a set that I have, another one from a company called Totally Rad, and
of course
they've got a set called Replichrome, and what they did is they used Noritsu and the Frontier scanners and scanned actual film samples,
right?
And did over and under on them to get overexposed, underexposed, and increase contrast and what happens to the tone curves when that happens. Now, if you side by side one of these with, you know, the Portra 160 Replichrome preset against Portra 160, are you going to get the same thing? Well, you might if you scanned that film with a Noritsu scanner or a Frontier scanner and you use similar settings and you use
Well, I was actually surprised. I was looking at the One Styles Pro, you know, the first one.
Right, right.
And there, one of them is Portrait 800, which I've shot before. And I looked at it and I go, yeah, that actually does kind of look like Portrait 800. Mm-hmm. You know, that transfer worked for me. Yeah. You know, but
I think it depends on the set, you know, and ultimately, you know, again, I think of these things as
starting places.
Yeah. They get you in the ballpark and then you get to sand and polish, you know, to get the mirror finish that you want.
You know, we have gotten to the point where, you know, your modern digital sensor is so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is actually giving you what real life is, as opposed to some translation, which we were used to with film. And we got used to that translation when in reality, now we have the reality, but we want the translation, you know?
I know a whole lot about the physics behind sensors, but they sure seem to be.
I guess what I'm saying is ultimately the colors are probably much more accurate on a modern digital sensor than they ever were on most films, you know, because films are, they've got ups and downs all through the curves and all
sure,
the different
yeah,
colors,
sure.
you know?
Sure.
So, but we like that look, you know, to some extent. It's it's interesting. Now I'm gonna have to give some of these a shot now that I'm using Capture One more.
Yeah.
I just moved to Capture One 10 on my laptop, and then I just moved it to it on my desktop. And you know, there's like a few new features it does, like output sharpening. Now I had a weird thing with Capture One 9 where if I had a TIFF in there and I tried to export the TIFF and it hadn't recently created a preview of the TIFF, it would error out, so it wouldn't actually export it until you regenerated the preview and then export it again. Like there was some bug.
Would it dump you to the desktop?
No. It wouldn't cancel, but it would pop up a dialogue said that, you know, I had all these errors and I couldn't export.
Huh.
It was an annoying bug that drove me crazy. So moving to 10, that's not a problem. But it's funny that the other day I noticed that when I jumped between images. And remember, my RAW files are enormous now, so I think that could be part of it. That it almost felt like it was re-rendering each time. It wasn't just showing me some sort of preview, as if the previews weren't made or something. So I got to find some setting. There's a lot of things in all these different pieces of software. There's, you know, so many settings, and it comes down to how the people who first designed this software on day one, sitting around a table together, thought things should be done, you know, the whole like sessions versus catalog or, right. you know, like metadata in the file.
Do you use
the
sessions or do you use catalog?
I'm sort of cheating. I'm using a session, but I have the file folder little tab tool thing open. So I'm jumping between folders inside of a single session. So I'm using a session as if it's a catalog. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I was having trouble with the size of the catalog I was trying to import and stuff. I actually, you know, interestingly enough, sorry, this is like lots of techie nerdy stuff today. I've been doing these shoots and on the road, and I dump everything to the laptop, and then I copy it onto like another drive or two. And then I start playing with them on the laptop and I do some rating and I kerfuts with some cropping or with some color stuff or whatever. And then I get home and I go, how do I move this over to the desktop and add it to my other thing in a way that preserves all this stuff? And you know, in Lightroom, you can turn on that thing where it just writes all the metadata to the DNG. Well, there's a similar thing in Capture One where you can have it write metadata as you're going, but it's a lot slower. Like it really slows things down to the point where it's, you know, not the kind of thing you want to use all the time.
Unless you've got the new 18-core iMac Pro.
Well, you know, I'll get to that in a second because I have some thoughts on that after thinking about it for a week. Anyway, so I'm still trying to work out the best workflow for basically keeping desktop and laptop in sync so that if I jump to the laptop, I suddenly have all the changes I made on this set of pictures on the desktop, you know, and vice versa. Mm-hmm.
You're using the 13-inch Pro? That's your laptop?
The 13-inch MacBook Pro, which I'm recording on right now, which I got to admit, man, I've been really – this is a nice machine. You know, mm-hmm. We were sitting at lunch today and we just did a AJA disk speed test.
Okay.
And it writes 1.7 gigs a second and it reads 2.4 gigs a second off the internal SSD.
It's fast.
It's super, really fast. So yeah, it's really good. So anyway, so it's just interesting trying to find a workflow that works for going back and forth. I haven't quite figured it out. So if anybody has any ideas, send me an email. All right, what else you got here?
You've got something in here. Effort.
Oh, I did.
What is this?
Okay, so I was thinking about this the other day because I had a shoot a couple weeks ago, and I did a good job on it. It's fine. Everyone's happy, but like, I'm not really satisfied with it. But some of the reasons why I'm not satisfied with it were out of my control. You know, my subject was in a bad mood. I didn't have a lot of time. The plans we were supposed to have got moved, so the location got moved. It wasn't as good of a location. The light wasn't as good because the time changed. You know, like all these kinds of things, right? And I walked away from it, and I kept sitting there, and I was kind of beating myself up about it. And I was thinking about it. I was actually talking to my therapist last week, and I said, you know, I was explaining the whole thing to him, and he goes, man, you're putting yourself inside of a blame box, basically, where you're to blame for all these things that you don't have control over. And I was like, yeah, but at a certain level, they're paying me because I can, you know, the buck stops here. You know what I mean? Like, ultimately, it's my job to make great pictures regardless of the circumstances as much as possible, right? You know,
sure.
And my therapist said, well, you know, I mean, this is like a little psychological here, but he said, you know, in some ways, no, that's not your job. Isn't to make amazing pictures no matter what. Your job is to go in and do the best job you can do. And I understand what he's saying in the
yes
sense
and
that,
no, the client right. has a funny way of seeing that differently.
Well, that's kind of why I threw it in here. So the idea was, you know, if my effort that day was as good of a job as I could have done, and I walked away going, I don't know what I would have done differently. You know, it's not like I screwed up or didn't work hard. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It wasn't that kind of thing. Like, I put in the effort, but I still didn't get the results that I wanted. Is the effort enough in some sense, right?
Depends on who you ask. I mean, if you ask your therapist, yes. If you ask the client who was expecting XYZ, then maybe no.
Right.
Because they're going to come back at you and go, well, okay, Bill, you may not be able to control the mood of the subject, but you're a photographer. You should be able to control the light and the location. So
right.
Yeah. What are we talking about here?
Right.
If you didn't
like the
location, why didn't you move? If you didn't like the light, why didn't you fix it?
Well, you know, the location is like, oh, we were going to shoot here and now we're not shooting there. We're shooting at this guy's house because that's, you know, where that's where he's going to be. So that's where you
gotta
go.
But you're a photographer, Bill. You're supposed to be able to make it work.
I know exactly. Right. That's the way I think to myself. And that's, I beat myself up about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I sometimes I wonder if that isn't wasted energy.
I mean, again, it depends on who you ask.
There are
those photographers who may look at you as a contemporary and go, nope, I totally get it. You did the best with what you could.
Right.
But then there are other photographers who'd go, cop out. You've got control.
Right. Well, and that is in some ways the little untold secret of the professional photo world is that not every shoot goes great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single photographer I know, and you know, you hear stories of, you know, oh, Joe Schmo or Jane Schmo was taking pictures of, you know, Jane Splo, you know, and it was,
what are the odds, Schmo and Splo in the same shoot?
And you know, it was a bleep show. You know what I mean?
Right.
That happens, you know, it happens a lot, and it's not talked about a whole lot, you know, and you know, it's sort of the old, baseball thing of, you know, the best hitter of all time only hit 4 out of 10, you know,
right.
He failed 6 out of 10 times.
Right.
And so there's a certain amount of, you know what, you get a mulligan every once in a while, or, you know, you're not swinging all the time. You can't hit a home run every single time, you know,
no, but you want to.
Yeah, of course you want to. But how much is it worth beating yourself up after the fact if you don't, you know what I'm saying? As opposed to just saying, ah, man, I fouled it off on that one. You know, going to get him next time. I'm not going to sit here and argue about the foul ball and wonder if I prepared earlier, if I noticed that his left hand moved to the right, so he was throwing a curveball or whatever the thing is, right?
Right, right, right. I don't know. I mean, I did a project recently with a client, and they had an internal pass at this project, and they sent that to me and said, this is not really what we're looking for. we'd like you to redo this.
Right.
So I redid it, and it was great, I think, especially the second iteration of it was terrific. I think it hit all the boxes that they wanted to be, that they wanted to hit. And it was good, really good. Okay. Sent it in, and they sent back what they decided to go with, which was kind of a hybrid between what they had originally done and what I had done. But
they took what you did and kind of messed with it.
Oh yeah. Which is fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's fine. I'm just like, is that fine or is it just fine? Because politically fine.
It's fine because they paid me for it and it's no longer mine.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's fine. But they sent it back, and now I'm looking at this kind of hybrid of what they did and what I did, and they were two completely different things.
Right.
It was, you know, it was like, I don't know, peanut butter and sauerkraut. I mean, yeah. It just
the mixture of the two didn't gel.
It just didn't go at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I what do I do?
Did you say as much?
Nope. Because that's not my place, and that's not what was being asked of me. What was being asked of me is to take a look at another portion of it and give some feedback on that, but not the overall design. But I still look at it and go, man, I don't know that I would put that in my book. I'd put what I did in my book, but I don't know that I would take that high. In fact, I do know I wouldn't put it in my book.
Right. Right.
You know? So it's, yeah, I mean, I get the, you think you do a good job. You think you give the client or the subject or yourself what you want. And then you look at it, you look at what turns out and you go, huh, all right.
Right.
That's the direction you wanted to go, huh? Okay.
Yeah. That's what you wanted to do?
All right.
Okay.
I mean, I wish you would have asked for that in the first place because I could have knocked that out in an hour.
Right.
Instead of spending, four days on it.
Or in some ways come back and said, hey, we really like what you did here, but we also decided we really like this element of the first thing we did. Is there anything you can do to merge them? Because maybe you would have come up with a better answer, you know?
And I don't know that the ideas couldn't be merged or you know, mixed.
Yeah.
I just think that the execution was a little, the execution could have used a little more finesse.
Right.
So,
yeah. There you go. So, but can you walk away from that and let it go?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
In that case, I can. Now, If a client like that were to come back and go, hey, we've got four other projects we'd also like you to do, would I do it? Probably not.
Right. So that changes everything.
Probably not. But it's, you know, it all adds to not only your experience of working with other clients or other people, but it adds to your level of experience and how you react. 10 years ago, I would have reacted a lot differently. Five years ago, I would have reacted a lot differently.
Yeah. And then there's also this question of, okay, the client in your case or my case, you know, their opinion is shifting too, because maybe internally the art director, absolutely, the editor and the whatever are having an argument.
Yeah. There are five other people that are weighing in on this or more.
Right. And who's to say they're actually right?
Absolutely.
In an objective way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I have become much less precious about work that is not exclusively my own. I still take pride in my work. Absolutely. But if I, like my book, for example, if I were doing this for a client, would have been done a long time ago because they wouldn't pay for the time that I've spent. You know,
right,
over every pixel and every color and every, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it still may, somebody may look at it and go, wow, it took you that long to do this.
Yeah. Or we'll take it, but we're going to make some changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is like, oh, you know.
Yeah. I'm resigned to doing the best work that I can on any given project in the moment that I'm doing it.
And that's the best.
That's the best I can do.
Which in some ways sounds more like my therapist's point of view, mm-hmm, in that case. You know, mm-hmm, the sort of, you did your best, your effort was there, you did what you could, and you can't control everything. You know, that's sort of that kind of way of thinking. Right.
You can't unless you are the sort of the alpha and the omega and everything in between. You can't control it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I've really had this kind of love hate relationship with this book project, is because, yes, I've been able to do exactly what I want, but it's also very similar to someone coming to you and going, Bill, go take a picture for this. We've got a 4-inch by 6-inch space. Go take a picture for it. Well, what do you want? I don't know. You're a photographer. Just go figure it out.
That's the worst kind of assignment
in the world.
Right. Yeah. And then or on a longer thing, if the target keeps moving.
Yes.
Well, we want these to be consistent. Oh God, they're all looking the same. Can you try it this way?
Can we mix it up a little now?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait a minute.
The similarities are too similar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that kind of thing, right? That happens too, which is, oh God, that's infuriating. It's really weird. It's just, hey Mario, can we see those, the pictures from the Colosseum? No pictures, Colosseum. No, it did not work.
Right. So I get it. I get it. But you know, you either take one side or the other, you know, and
in some ways your professional view of something can be different from your internal psychological view of something.
Sure.
And that's also like a whole other, oh, well, you know, yes, I need to let it go from a professional point of view, or I need to let it go from a personal point of view, but maybe from a professional point of view, things need to change.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I mean?
I mean, it's one of the things that I, you know, sometimes do is I go, okay, and in 90 days or 120 days, am I going to care about this?
Yeah. Yeah. Does that work?
Sometimes.
Game?
Yeah. Sometimes it depends on what the project is and where it's going to live. If it's online, no. I mean, on the half-life of an online insert project here, it has dropped to almost nothing.
Yeah. Years ago, I did a website for, I designed a site for budget.com.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, the budget.com site was mine for like a good 10 years. I mean, things got changed over the years, you know, like little minor tweaks and whatever it is. But pretty much it was the thing that I had built years ago, which is always like a really weird feeling thing where I could go back to it years after I stopped doing that kind of work. And, you know, it was still kind of back the way it was. And it was one of those rare things that survived for, you know, a decade.
Right.
But that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Yeah.
And it's, what was the statistic that they said at WWDC that people now take a trillion photos?
Yeah. A trillion photos.
Was it a day?
A year? Well, let's think about it. It's got to be it's got to be a year. No one takes a trillion photos a day. Even if there's 100 million devices, people aren't taking hundreds of pictures a day each. You know what I mean? It's got to be a year.
Yeah, it's got to be.
But yeah,
it was in the Apple keynote. Yeah, but
in the last year, more pictures have been taken than in all history before, or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like one of those sort of crazy things that doesn't make any sense and hurt your brain. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I'll give you guys updates on that kind of stuff as we go forward. But I just thought it was interesting, this whole, you know, how much effort you put in versus the results. Should you putting in the effort and not screwing up and still not getting the results you want, is that a failure of effort or a failure of skill? Or is it just, you got to chalk this one up to a mulligan or
what? Again, I think it depends on who you ask.
Yep.
You know, because I think those Venn diagrams would look very different coming from the creative or the maker's perspective versus the client or the biz dev person's perspective.
Sure. Right. But those biz dev people, they don't actually do work, right?
Oh, that was Bill. That wasn't Jeffrey. That was Bill.
Hey, I used to work at an agency. This is kind of neither here nor there, but it is funny how in an ad agency or whatever, the salespeople are like, man, we made the $1 million, $10 million deal with RCA. Like, now you guys just got to do the work, you know? And all the creative people are like, we're the only reason we're here is because the work needs to get done. And
right.
We do the work, you know, everyone. And then the producers are like, yeah, but if I wasn't here cracking the whip, none of you would get anything done, you know, whatever.
We built the capsule. All you have to do is land it.
Exactly. That's which is just kind of fun. You know, I was a friend of mine came over. My friend Bianca came over and the other day and she goes, Bill, do you have any books like about the moon landing? And I was like, Bianca, do I have books about the moon landing?
let's go to the vault, shall we?
Yeah. I said, the problem with this question is that I have like 30 books on the moon landing here that I still, you know, kept.
A lot of people know. That's why Bill's apartment is actually so small, is because 80% of it is filled with, you know,
4 feet from the physical wall.
Right.
I was like, I'm so nerdy. I read the transcripts from the debriefings when they got back.
Right.
It's just kind of funny. All right. What else you got?
Well, it was a few weeks ago that we were maybe even a month ago or so that we were talking about spaces. And I think your question was, do spaces imbue you with superpowers?
Yeah.
Something to that effect. Do you remember that episode?
Yep, I do.
264, 263. I was watching on the YouTube. Someone posted a BBC documentary about David Gilmour, a guitar player for Pink Floyd, if you don't know who that is. And it is called Wider Horizons. And it opens up with David has a floating a recording studio, a barge recording studio on the Thames River.
And who doesn't?
Right. And there, you know, there's this beautiful shot of the barge and, you know, like people sculling, you know, alongside of it. It's just it's picturesque. Right.
Yeah.
He describes the way in which he found this place. He says he was being driven somewhere and they were driving by the road, driving by this portion of the Thames. And they saw this. He saw this barge and said, stop. And went down and looked at it and was just really taken by this boat. And he said later on, he was sometime later. I didn't catch how long, but he was at his dentist and he said he picked up an issue of Country Life magazine and that same boat was for sale.
And
so he
and he happened to have millions of dollars sitting around. So right. Perfect.
So who knew? But he said he had to have it. So he bought it straight away and turned it into a recording studio and, Momentary Lapse of Reason was recorded there. And I think,
So he's had it a long time.
Yeah. He's had it a while. And, what was the other Floyd record that was recorded there? Anyway, that's his kind of home away from home. And it was just kind of wonderful to hear how he spoke about this place and what this environment, what this boat brought to their music.
Right.
You know, here's someone who's arguably got access to, you know, any studio in the world and chooses to record and does all the work to convert this thing into a recording space and chooses to record in this specific room on this specific boat on this specific spot on the Thames because it's somehow connects him to that music.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just thought it was fascinating. The whole documentary is terrific, but,
I guess the other question is if he didn't have the means to just go buy this boat, would he really have made different music or is that all just a perception thing?
Right. You know? Right. How would it have sounded different?
Yeah. Is my magic sword actually magic or is my belief that it is magic enough?
Right.
Yeah.
So go take a look at it. Maybe we can talk about it next week or something or the following week.
Sure.
Give people a couple weeks to take a look at it. It's David Gilmour, Wider Horizons. It's a BBC documentary and the link is there.
Sorry, I was writing down a title. Titles. It's fun writing down titles.
Yeah.
Prince, huh? Pictures of Prince.
Pictures of Prince. This was kind of cool. Dazed.
Nicole Nodland.
Yeah. Dazed Magazine, which is Rankin's magazine.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, this collection of Nicole, yeah, as you said, Nicole Nodland, now the editor-in-chief of the indie journal Us of America, started her career as a personal photographer to Prince, touring with the band and documenting his life for 2 years. Since then, her portfolio has added icons such as Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, George Clinton, and Lana Del Rey. And it was just, I don't know, it's...
You know what I love about the idea of, is I love the idea of Prince, just because Prince is so Prince about everything. And I know he'd be a handful and a pain in the ass and blah, blah, blah. But you could also print. You also know if you got Prince in front of a camera, you're not going to get a guy just standing there.
Oh, no.
You know?
No.
Right. Like, you know, you're going to get something, him being some sort of Prince type person, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I love this.
He was a weird looking dude.
I turned around to find Prince staring at me with his intense big eyes. He asked me just two questions. How old are you? And do you have any Polaroid? I answered him. He walked past me and then proceeded to jam with the band. I picked up my camera and the rest was history. I became the first in-house photographer at Paisley Park. He brought me into his beautiful bubble. For the next 2 years, I spent all my time at Paisley surrounded by creativity and music. I was fortunate enough to travel the world with Prince and accompany him on tour with the New Power Generation. And look at that photo of him at the console. Look at those shoes. Look at how.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Dripping with style.
Could you imagine? I look at some of these clothes that Prince wears and I go, I don't even know if I could sit there. Like, just to have the balls to wear something like that, let alone actually pull it off.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's on another level, right? It's just like, it's way out there.
Yeah.
In a really cool way.
These are great. And you know, it's
funny. There's a nice mix of, you know, very obviously, you know, we're shooting for a magazine or an art album or whatever. And also nice shots of him playing on stage or him sitting in the studio there. It's mm-hmm. you know, or even the other one of him in the studio, number 16, where he's just got the sunglasses on inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Big reel to reels behind him.
Yeah. Oh, Prince. Oh, what a waste.
Yep. So that makes anyway,
me sad.
Cool shots.
Yeah. Real cool. Real cool.
Yeah.
Man, I just, man, there's something else. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. All right.
I was going to bring up the iMac thing,
go ahead.
So yesterday, just on a lark, because, you know, this whole we talked about it, I guess, last week where, you know, Apple's putting out the new iMac Pro and ECC RAM and Xeon processors and big honking GPUs. And somehow they're fitting it into the same size body and not having it be loud and huge. I don't know how they're doing that, but whatever. I went and looked because, you know, for 95% of photography, four cores is plenty. Like most of these things do not use, they don't scale well to a whole bunch of cores, you know. Mm-hmm. Getting an 18 core processor to do photo stuff on is a kind of a waste of time, unless all you're doing is exporting and you're using something that actually, you know, can multi-thread that well, which very few of them can. So I just looked at what it would cost for the new 5K iMac terabyte drive SSD, and the four core i7, so like the top line processor, 1 terabyte SSD, and then I would put more RAM in after the fact, you know. And it was $3,099.
Oh, for the current, for the non pro iMac.
For the non pro iMac, yeah.
Yeah.
$3,000 plus $350 for another 32 gigs of RAM. So it would bring you up to 40 gigs of RAM for less than $3,500 with a 5K monitor, quad core, 1 terabyte SSD that does 3 gigs a second.
Right. So for the extra $2,000, you're getting double ECC the number RAM of cores.
And eight cores
where it starts.
Yeah.
But it's also an 8-core Xeon processor.
Right, which doesn't make it any faster, but there's arguments about, oh, well, that has more PCIe lanes, I guess. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? The chipset or whatever, right? And what is your feeling on the ECC RAM question?
What's the question?
Well, the question is whether or not it's a necessary at workstation level, like the whole idea of like error correcting. Like how often does RAM create an error that is, you know, unrecoverable?
Yeah, not for me. I no. You know, is it, yeah, is some it people worth,
swear by it.
you know, is it worth $2,000 extra dollars? Is it worth $5,000 from three to go double core? You're getting a better video card, but Radeon AMD hasn't even announced the Vega chips yet, so we don't even really know what it's capable of.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be very fast, but you know,
I will say that, I need that just an 18 core Xeon chip is about $6,000.
Right. So the high end one of that is going to be, you know, 10, 15 grand.
Probably. If you topped it all out, sure. Look, it's the iMac or the iWatch. What's the edition? Yeah, it's the iWatch edition version of computers.
Man, I still have a real problem with the idea that you're buying a computer that is entirely not upgradable.
No, yeah. And apparently
you're spending $5,000 on a thing you can't swap the GPU out in 3 years. You know?
No, and I fix it. There's not a RAM door on the back. iFixit said that in order to get to the RAM, even on the current iMacs, you've got to break the seal around the monitor.
Really?
Yeah. There's an adhesive seal that's holding, you know, between the glass and the backplate that's got to be broken away to get to the RAM. Yes, the RAM is accessible in terms of it's not soldered onto the board, but there's no RAM hatch like there used to be.
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
Just to make you buy the RAM from them for way too much money? It's like $600 for RAM from them.
Right.
Man, that sucks. Yeah, it's just stuff. I don't know. It's not
there.
Either,
there
not
was a there. MKBHD did kind of a quick who is this for? And
the Pro, the new one.
Yeah, the Pro. And I think there are some parallels there in cameras to bring this back to photography for a change. Yes.
It's not for that many.
No. And his biggest point was, you know, Apple has already said that they're coming out with a modular Mac Pro next year.
Yeah. Yep.
And this one's coming out in December, which may get pushed until next year. It's not upgradable. So who exactly is this for?
Right.
You know, and he was like, yeah, you're going to have some people that do go ahead and buy this, the Apple faithful or a small section of the Pro market.
It's a great machine, but if the new Pro costs $4,000 to start and is upgradable over the years, no brainer, right? That's the one you buy.
Sure, sure. Even if it's $5,000, but it's $5,000 with no monitor, but it's upgradable, still worth it.
Right. So wait, so what was his analogy to photography?
Well, no, I mean, I'm using the analogy to photography. It's similar to Fuji, let's say, putting a lot of marketing dollars behind the medium format camera.
The GFX, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay, it's $20,000 less than a Hasselblad, but it's still $5,000 more than the average prosumer is going to pay.
Right. Sure.
So
and also similarly, you know, as I just said, how the you know, Photo's not going to use any more cores than that. You know, I know that what's his name? Who's the Mac performance guy, the Lloyd Digiloid. You know what I'm talking about? Performance.
Digiloid.
There's a guy named Digiloid who does a thing called the Mac Performance Guide. Digiloid. Where he basically takes crazy big files and he sets up tests to do crazy things with them in Photoshop and all kinds of stuff just to see.
Oh, you know, okay. Almost, you know, like a 3D Mark type thing where it just runs through simulations. Yeah. Okay.
But, and he'll do it and he'll say, you know, I've tried this on the 4, 6, 8, and 12 core Mac Pro and, you know, it tops out on the 6 core. Like it doesn't even use the last two, you know, you get 2% for the other two cores, you know, whatever.
So what are we doing?
Right. So it's not for photo people. Maybe it's for video people. Maybe it's for developers, you know, who just want like a really fast thing to render code on, you know, to compile code on. But like, again, wouldn't they be using a Mac Pro, all these people, because they want to swap things out and stuff. And then Apple puts on the whole external GPU thing. So, oh, I need more GPUs. I'll just plug one in via Thunderbolt and that'll give me CUDA support or whatever. You know, like that's also a weird way of doing it. I guess it works. But
if it's are they integrating like an SLI or a Crossfire type of situation with that? Or are they, or
well,
does
none of that's
going to
work. Yeah. Oh, each one. I would imagine that it would be in the same way that Resolve, if you stick in graphics cards that you don't actually use for graphics, Resolve will just use them as GPU engines, essentially.
Huh, okay. Okay.
Just as like co-processors. Remember math co-processors?
Yeah. Pro mode.
Wow, I'm so old now. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to go on a tangent.
No, that's about all right. One of the other things that came out of WWDC that didn't really get a lot of play, but is relevant to us as podcasting folks, is Apple is finally going to let podcast creators into the analytics engine.
Yeah, that seems like way overdue, right?
Yeah.
Like, why not allow that?
Well, I think it's part of their overall stance on privacy, because what they aren't doing is giving you demographic information or detailed breakdowns of who's coming from where.
Even how is that a privacy violation to know that 30% of our listeners are in America?
I don't know, but it's their playground. They get to do what they want.
Yeah, I guess.
And I'm just thankful that this stuff is coming out, because the podcast app, the Apple podcast app, is still the most widely used app for getting podcasts. So to be able to see,
as not good as it is,
well, it's gotten better, and it's, you know, if it takes a redesign, then, you know, I'm sure they'll do it. But sure, notwithstanding, to be able to see what listeners are listening to, when they are listening to episodes relative to when they are posted, and what they are and are not skipping while listening to those, I think is going to be huge. And look, the ad agents, the ad model is going to change regardless, but I think a lot of advertisers are going to go, wow, they're not even listening to our content, so what are we paying for?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So theoretically,
if people are skipping the first five and last 5 minutes of a podcast because that's where the ads typically are.
Right.
Then, you know,
or they get to when we say we're going to go to the group and they go, I don't care about the group or the photographer of the week, so I'm just going to ignore that or whatever.
Absolutely. Which I think is terrifically valuable information.
But also dangerous from the point of view of this being, you know, a viable medium.
Well, yes and no. I would rather not live in the bubble and assume that people are listening start to finish and have the information that, wow, this type of content, or if you're following a specific format and you go, okay, we're doing what we did this weekend, then we're talking about news, then we're talking about our main discussion, then we're going to the group, then we're doing a wrap up. I want to see, okay, so 80% of the people listen to this, but 20% of the people are tuning out here. Okay, well then let's tweak that.
Sure.
So to make that more interesting.
True.
So yeah. I think it's a great thing. I'm very excited about it.
Completely different feedback.
It's a different kind of feedback loop, man. So,
man, life is like a different kind of feedback.
Life is just a one big feedback loop. So,
want to go to the group?
Yeah,
we're getting a little tight.
Cut it a little short. So, man, there are some. I'm just going to say it. I haven't said it in a long time since last week, but
oh boy,
there are some terrific double exposures this week.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Terrific.
Yeah. Pictures. Tim Timoteo, man, that one with the red is great.
Yeah. With the girl against the wall and then the train. Love that. Govis. I love the guy kind of hidden in the prints hanging there. Another one from Tim with some silhouettes. Florian, great. I mean, these are terrific.
Yeah.
You guys, you suck.
You're constantly surprised that we have talented listeners.
I'm not surprised. I just love seeing them. Barry, terrific. What I love seeing is when, like in Tim's and even in Barry's, where the entire composition becomes an exercise in abstraction, where I really have to look to see what's going on. And that gets me going. I love it. Ken Larman, terrific. Ken Wilson, good one. I mean, these are fun.
Man, the whole multiple exposure thing is it's like throwing caution to the wind, you know?
Yeah. Tanya, I've been doing cyanotypes the past few days, so for the assignment, I asked my daughter to pick out two negatives. Random double exposure. That's terrific. It's terrific.
Yeah. Good.
Ken Pringle, love it. Danny, Oscar. A lot of people participated in this one. Thank you very much, you guys. I love seeing this much participation. How about we do something? Maybe in the show notes or just email us, tweet us. What about listener suggestions for upcoming assignments?
Oh, for upcoming assignments? Yeah.
What would you guys like to do for assignments? You know, we're trying to come up with these every week and we love doing it, but maybe we do some that you don't really dig. This one seems to have struck a chord. Give us some suggestions. What would you like to see in upcoming assignments? Podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
And you can use the word dig like Jeffrey does from the 70s.
I am a child of the 70s, man.
that kind of went out of favor after the 70s, didn't it? Dig.
I don't know. Dig me, man. I still use that. I still use
you still
stiffy.
Dig it.
I still say trousers. I mean, it's my thing, man.
You say trousers?
What else are they? Pants?
Yeah.
What am I, a farmer?
Yeah, trousers, that's a British thing too, right? Because pants is your underwear, right? In England.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been to England. Although that may change soon.
Oh, really?
Dun, dun, dun.
There's a guy named Simon that I know from over there who used to be on a show.
Is it Simon LeBon from Duran Duran? Please tell me it's Simon LeBon.
No, his name is Simon Hickson. He used to be on a show, a kids thing called Trevor and Simon, Trev and Simon. So if there's any British listeners. So I know Simon from Trevor and Simon, and they used to have a thing where they said, swing your pants, and they would swing your pants. I'll see if I could
take off your, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It would was, they take them off and swing them around?
I think the idea was that you would, I don't know.
Or was the British version of my name's Nathaniel and I like to dance? Is it that kind of thing?
It was that kind of thing. I'll put a link in the
British
show
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Yeah, so they would say swing your pants.
Okay.
It was a whole thing. But it's funny because you hang out with them and you're at some pub or whatnot. And invariably somebody will come up and be like, hey, Simon, swing your pants, man. You know, you're like, oh, boy. You know,
here it is.
Yeah, here it is all over again.
Can't I get a moment's peace?
he's a good guy, though. All right, so where are we? So what's our assignment for next week?
Okay, so the assignment next week, are you ready for this?
Yep.
Print. Now, this could be a print, a photograph of a print.
Right.
It could be you writing something in print and photographing it, or it could be a printed sign, printed matter that you take pictures of.
Okay.
I'd love to see some of your prints on my wall. What? But print.
Okay.
I'm trying to look. I follow a guy on Instagram who does – he worked at – he was an art director at Ray Gun magazine. You remember Ray Gun?
Sure. Ray Gun was what's his name? It's David Carson's thing,
Carson's
right?
Mag, yeah. And he's
was
posting,
it his or did, was he the art director or whatever?
He was the art or creative director, one of the two.
Okay.
But he's posting all these old shots of like covers and, old pages of half used Letraset type and, you know, press on type letters and things like that. And it's so amazing to see how far we've come in terms of, you know, going from pasting up by hand and using stat cameras to being able to do this kind of stuff on your phone and then send it immediately to a billion people.
Yeah. 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 Do you think we thought about it more when it was harder to do?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the bulk of my design life has been as a digital designer, and I think about it quite a bit.
Okay.
I only did a few projects in college that were paste up, you know, that were done by hand. I've done it by choice, but not as client work.
That's because you're a true believer.
Am I?
I don't know. Sometimes. I'm not saying that as a bad thing.
All right. What do you mean? A true believer in what?
No, of like, you know, the old way of doing things and you know, what have you.
I just dig craft, man.
I know. I'm not denying.
There, I used it again. I didn't even know I did it, but I did it.
Man, you just dig that stuff.
I do.
photographer of the week is Wolf Szczesinski, who was both a man. He lived to be 104. This man.
That's what? Up there. That is up there.
He was born in Austria, but he was known as a member of the British documentary movement. And the great thing about it is that he both shot stills and he was a cinematographer. So he sort of crossed those lines.
Did you ever see the flick Get Carter? That was one of the flicks that he shot.
I've never watched the whole thing, but I've seen scenes from it. In fact, I saw that you put a link to the
trailer,
which I will put in here too. Why, you were a big fan of that movie?
I love that. Well, it's Michael Caine. I love Michael Caine. My name is Michael Caine. I love Michael Caine.
Did you? I'm sorry for half a second. Did you see the thing of, oh God, who was it? These two British comedians doing Michael Caine at each other at a dinner table.
No, but it I'll
find
it.
They were talking
hysterical.
About it on. They were. I'll find it and put it in here because it was on. Back to Work, they were talking about it because Merlin was obsessed with it and I watched it. And it was actually kind of funny. I'll find it and put it in here. But you know, man, 104 years. That is a long life.
Chris Ashworth, by the way, is the guy from Ray Gun. If you want to follow him on Instagram.
I will add a thing to Chris Ashworth.
Yeah, Instagram. Ashworth Chris is his handle. So yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. All right, I'll find that. I'll put it in the thing in a second.
Yeah.
So you did you know about Szczesinski before any of this? Before we talked about him?
No. I saw that he directed Get Carter, and I was like, no way! I love that movie.
Yeah.
Very different than the remake with Sylvester Stallone, by the way.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's a completely different thing. Right?
Completely different. Only.
But he's got these pictures of post, during, and war England, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like these black and white photos of, you know, the streets of London at the time, like, you know, them dealing with the war and rebuilding after the war and, you know, the shells of things. Like, I tell you, man, you watch these guys, like, you know, remember when we went to see that Paul Strand show?
Yeah.
That's what it was, right? In Philly?
In Philly, yeah. Like 2,500 pictures.
And that was a long show. But the guy's career spanned such an era that it was horse and buggy on one end and, you know, airplanes on the other
right.
end. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, and everything in between. And not only did their style change and what they were shooting change, but the way you took pictures, like the format changed. So film looked differently. It was lower contrast and then it became higher contrast. And, you know, and you flip through Szczesinski's pictures and they're a lot like that. I mean, there's like beautiful architectural stuff and there's pictures on the street and there's some fashion photography, just amazing, amazing work. And I'm going to find some good links to put in here. This stuff like kills me.
It is both timely and timeless given kind of where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes you, I think it makes you feel a little bit better about work you do today, knowing that, yes, it looks like today now, but tomorrow it's going to look like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you take a lot of street pictures now and you go, oh yeah, but the cars are all just modern cars. It just looks like whatever. Well, that's exactly what they thought in the 70s when they were taking pictures. Now we look back at them and they go, oh my God, look at all those 70s cars.
Right.
You know,
I think that's one of the things I dig about Todd Schick's work up in Saskatchewan is that he's capturing these sort of timeless cars from our youth and our adolescence, you know, station wagons and old pickup trucks. And there is something about that timelessness. And how timelessness is directly related to how old you are. What is timeless for you and I is going to be completely different for someone who's in their 20s or in their 60s.
Yeah. I love that idea that people are that like we're just on this train that's sliding through time. And if you take a picture out the window today, you know that it's not history now, but it will be someday. You know,
mm-hmm.
And especially with photography, I think has that.
has that skill of making things feel timeless after the fact in a way that video doesn't. You know, it really does capture a moment in a frame. It's kind of the cool thing about photography. It lets the imagination fill in the rest, you know. Anyway, go take a look at Wolf Schuschinski because his work is lovely. And yeah. And you need to go see a baseball game.
I am going to go see a baseball game.
If people need to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411.
Just like Tom in Michigan. You know, we've slowed down a little bit on people calling in and claiming where they're from. So
yeah, pick that up again. Don't you want to be cool like Tom? I know I do. So yeah. 347-687-9411.
Somewhere Tom is just nodding at the speakers going.
Yeah, he is.
That's right.
Twiddling his hair.
Yeah. Just
At Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris on Instagram and Twitters. And we will see you next week. I'm actually on the road
next week. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, so we'll figure out either we record later this week and put it out next week, or we do another one from the road.
One from the road, I think, could be fun. Get one of these mics.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be...
You sound fine.
Tuesday, as long as I have good Wi-Fi, that's the issue. Tuesday, I'm actually going to be traveling. So even if we had to do one over the phone and you record my end on Skype,
that's
fine. Like over Skype.
Yeah, it's fine.
We could do that from the airport or something like that. That could be fun.
That could be pretty funny. Yeah.
from Denver.
That's a huge, you ever been there? That's a humongous airport.
Yeah. It looks like a big top tent.
Yeah, it's giant. Yeah.
So we'll figure it out. So maybe we'll do that. That'll be fun.
Yep.
Until then, go take some pictures, people.
Yep. Thank you for listening. We enjoy and appreciate you being here every week.
Yeah, we do.
And thank you again for the prints, Phil. Can't tell you how much I love it. I can't wait to get
Phil,
it framed
I'll send
it up on
you
the
my
wall.
Address in a minute.
He's not going to do it, Phil. You know, he's not.
Phil's going to get the email before he listens to this, and then he's going to listen to it and go, oh, man, he wasn't kidding.
Or he's going to go, finally.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. He's like, I'm sorry, they already burned it as Tinder. Yeah, I didn't think you actually wanted it.
He sent it to, I don't know, whoever.
He sent it to Tom in Michigan.
Yeah, he sent it to Fro.
All right. See you later, Jim.
All right, see ya. So long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Say, Willie.